En podcast fra Podplay.
Ok, men da funker det. Vi har,
da ruller vi.
Vi kan engelsk. Det har vi på stell.
Det har vi på stell.
Ja, men da ja. Kjører vi. 3, 2, 1. When lift off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Interfere. Ok, we checked all four systems. And there you go on modulation. All four and keying with a go. Quality base here. The Eagle has landed. Velkommen, kjære Ørven, til din favorittpod... Jeg sier det hver gang litt på automatikk, men så føler jeg kanskje at det litt sånn oppesen også å bare konstatere at det favoritt. Det kan jo hende noen har en annen favorittpodcast om romfart.
Ja, at vi liksom den man fyller opp til. Ja, den tredje eller fjerde. Ja. Det også lov det, da.
Ja, ja, for all del. Vi setter pris på alle ørevenner, uansett hvordan de rangerer oss. Det greit. Ok, vi skal slå over på engelsk, Eirik, for vi skal snakke om... Dette en litt sånn unikt I norsk sammenheng, vil jeg påstå.
Dette her jo da noe vår husvenn Nima involvert I, og som han har nevnt det I
Vi har snakket om det flere ganger.
Vi har snakket om det flere ganger. Han har vært inne på det at de nå har de europeiske rettighetene til det som da et veldig sånn ambisiøst NASA-program for utdanning og prosjektarbeid med skoleelever.
Ja.
Og det altså da det som heter NASA Hunch. Så da det vel egentlig bare på tide og, ja, Du kan jo introdusere gjestene våre
La meg gjøre det, det som har kommet, så For å kaste litt sånn glans over at nå dette
Vi har NASA-gjester
Det ikke ofte vi har Men nå har vi ekte og ser And veldig NASA-skutt
Someone here realized what we said Yeah, we're not worthy, we have NASA-guests For the first time in the studio Usually it's just online, so this is great
This is very nice George Kessler, thank you very much for joining us All the way from some huge NASA building In the United States of launching America.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Good to be here with you guys.
Thank you. And we also have Scott Rodriguez, NanoRock's vice president.
Yeah, that's right. And also, I mostly, more importantly and more favorite to me, the program manager for Hunch, my favorite part of my job.
Yeah. But George looks more NASA than you do.
He's definitely got the shirt today.
Yeah.
George is more NASA than
I am. Yeah, and he works out more. He works out
well,
more.
Well, I don't know about that. Well,
Suddenly
I'm wiry.
Got personal hair. Do we need to go into who works out more, please?
No.
No, can we just
don't.
Move on to the signs?
Yeah.
The okay. Brainy stuff?
Yeah. So to kind of... explain to maybe new listeners what we've mentioned Hunch a bunch of times. So it's a project that links into schools for what high school is it?
It's the acronym is actually High School Students United with NASA to Create Hardware. We have talked about changing it a few times, but it's primarily high schools in the United States.
Because we have a thing about acronyms here. We always love good, and this is a really good one.
Yeah.
Because this actually is sort of relevant.
I
won't go into details, but some of the acronyms used by, for instance, NASA, we sort of said, what? But this one is perfect.
This one makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's great, dude. Yeah. And it's to, for real, develop solutions to actual problems in what related to the NASA activity.
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. About 20 years ago, it started out with one of our current, actually still Hunch members, a guy named Bob Zeke. Came up with an idea. It's like NASA was spending all this money building training hardware. So we built flight hardware, right? But then also training hardware was costing about as much. And he said, well, I think it was him and Stacy Hale said, well, what if we had students build the training hardware? And they got approval from NASA to do it. They started out doing that, but the hardware was so good that NASA said, maybe they could build flight hardware too. And it just took off from there.
And this is, as you said, it's linked to the high school system. And just for Norwegian listeners, how old are American high school students? What age range are we talking about?
Mm-hmm. Probably 15 to 18 to 19 years old.
Yeah. And as for the acronym, that stands for, let's see, High Schools United to Create Hardware. So it's really...
Close, yeah.
It does what it says on the tin.
We had the N for NASA. So high schools... United with NASA to create hardware. You nailed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's a NASA there. Oh, yeah. Actually, I just copy and pasted, and I think there's a NASA missing. But that's an acronym in an acronym. That's really cool.
That's true. I've never thought about
it's
that.
It's a recursive acronym, and that's the best for nerds. So you are really, now you're scoring top marks here. And as it says on your website, it's 511 classroom programs, 46 U.S. states, 21 organizational partners, 3,000 plus flown items. That's a huge number.
It's Probably higher than that.
And even higher. And we'll get back to that. And almost 2,600 students at least the time of writing on the website.
Correct.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's correct. The number continues to go up. And for phone items, the number continues to increase every school year because we're constantly delivering to NASA. So, and these are the high school students that are manufacturing, designing, and developing all these products for NASA.
Okay, so they are manufacturing them as well. We have talked earlier about the specs for getting things flown in space.
Oh, yeah.
And they are rigorous.
Very
and
rigorous.
And they are high school students actually making, not just blueprints and plans, right. They're actually making them.
Exactly. So, and we get that a lot. It's like, wow, is that possible for high school students to do this type of work? You know, don't you have to be... you know, really special and educated and very skilled. And the fact is that, yes, these high school students, if given the proper information, they will meet the challenge and produce products that are just as good or better than anyone in the industry can produce. And that's what Hunch does. We bring the requirements. We bring some of the expertise. We give them the challenge. And then we just support them throughout that challenge. But they rise to the occasion and they actually produce these products.
Mm. Yeah, that's extremely impressive.
But how is Hunch sort of integrated in their normal school work day? I mean, is this stuff that they do in their free time, or is it integrated with? Because I saw on your site that you use project-based learning, which is also well-known in Norway, prosjektbasert læring, which is, and that's, it's a very common method to use. So is this sort of integrated in, do they earn merit points, or are they graded, or is this outside the...
Yes, so the teacher actually takes the projects and works them into their existing curriculum.
Yeah, right.
So it is part of their regular classes. And so the teacher takes the project, and they figure out how it's going to merge with what they're already required to do. And it fits perfectly almost every time. So then the students go to work on these projects and work on it throughout the school year.
It's when I remember, and you also kind of always get reminded of when I was in school, oh, why do I need to learn this? What's it applicable for? I don't know why. And this is like, totally focused, and you know why you're doing this. So I mean, I think started out as a hey, let's kind of make some training equipment cheaper. Now it's turning out to be just a win-win on all sides.
It is, for sure. And it's that's what I like about this project, or about this STEM program. A lot of STEM programs are done for the right reasons, but very few of them probably actually give back in a financial manner or in productive, you know, equipment manner to the funding organization. STEM, or in the U.S., Hunch is funded entirely by the ISS program. Excuse me. The ISS program of NASA. And we do build flight hardware. We also do soft goods. Somewhere along the way, and this is before my time, but George may remember, NASA said, well, the crew office probably came to Hunch and said, hey, we have a problem with something. We can't figure out how to dispense tape in orbit or something. You know, the astronauts are just tearing it with their teeth. It floats around everywhere. What are we going to do about tape? And we created a design and prototype portion of Hunch where student teams from around the country and now beyond, maybe in Norway, take problems that we throw out to them from NASA, and throughout the school year, they work on solutions for them. What's cool about this is you come up with all kinds of different solutions from different teams. Sometimes maybe one solution will work. Sometimes none of them work. But sometimes you'll get a collaboration of one from this team or one from that team. But we take those designs later, you know, after the school year, after we do final design reviews towards the end of their school year, and we'll send them to another group that we have called Flight Configuration, and we'll actually develop those for flight. So if you go up to the International Space Station right now,
yes,
and
please,
you need tape, yeah, we'll send
yes,
you.
Please.
We can send you, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me later at Nanorax. I'll send you. If you go up to the ISS and you want tape, you're getting it off the Hunch tape dispenser that is on orbit now. Same thing with like something like the Bogan arm. I don't know if you're familiar on the ISS, they have this thing called the Bogan arm, and it's what holds things like cameras and all kinds of stuff in the middle. They attach it to things. Well, they're failing, and the astronauts get really frustrated with them. They don't like them. So we developed the HUB, another acronym, the Hunch Utility Bracket. And we
recursive,
we flight tested the first one, and they've asked for, I think, four or five more on this next launch. So That sort of thing.
Wow. You
know, design and prototype is a really big part of Hunch now. They come to us and we're actually starting to have to say no sometimes, which I hate to do, but they're starting to come to us with some really interesting problems that I just don't want to get involved in. One was like the brine processing system, you know, urine processing system on ISIS. Mm-hmm. They actually came to us and asked us to look at that, the containments and everything. I had to say no to that one. I didn't want to get involved. I know I have enough friends at NASA to know that this one was a tough one.
Yeah.
It's a complicated system.
Yeah, we have a show coming up about the whole waste management problem, and it's fascinating, but also as really really complex. And there are things about it that some people might not want to get into. But
exactly.
But anyways, again, I'm sort of interested also in the process here. So. Project-based learning, where you have a concrete problem and you talk to the people who have the problem and you have a dialogue going and you mm-hmm. start to develop, answer questions. I went to your solution site where you have posted a lot of PDFs mm-hmm. and we'll link to that on our Facebook page mm-hmm. because it's really interesting because you can download the PDFs and you can see the process, right? You can see which schools have participated, what questions they asked, right. How the astronauts responded, which is that's how project-based learning works. So how does if a high school in the United States wants to do this, how do they start out? Do they just send a mail or?
Yeah.
They apply. We have links on our website. And I'm looking at George now mm-hmm. because you've been going to the website, which is awesome, but we're supposed to have redone completely our website already. And we're lagging behind on it right now.
Okay.
So we're going to have some real updates to it coming up soon. Stay tuned.
Okay.
But schools can't apply. We unfortunately, we have about 200 schools in the U.S. right now that are participating. We could have probably 400 tomorrow if we wanted to. There's no shortage of schools that want to participate. Unfortunately, we do have limitations. We don't want to dilute the quality of the educational experience. So we make sure that we have enough mentors in the Hunch program to be able to service the schools. Our mentors, if you let them, they will work themselves to death. Like they'll take on way more schools than they can reasonably travel to and help with. So we have to sort of rein that back in. But if a school does apply and they get in, they pick the different, we have 8 different disciplines that people participate in, from culinary to, you know, soft goods to.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. That's interesting.
That is a fun one. So, and by the way, schools in Norway can participate in culinary right now. We have international participation in that already. So, but they pick the disciplines they want to participate in. They apply. We do, really, it's almost like a resume. We do look at them. I will say this, and something I learned from George when I started a few years back with Hunch is I got excited because we got this, an application. Some teacher had reached out to me and they sent me for machining, right? And they sent me a pictures and a whole write-up of their entire shop. And I was like, this is incredible. This is like an industrial machine shop at this high school. And I took it to George and said, these guys are in, right? And he's like, well, look, I'm telling you, it's not about the facilities. It's about the teacher at that, organization.
Yeah, that really interests me is the requirements, right? And that's also something that the listeners are interested in, George. So what sort, they have to have some sort of basic facilities to do sort of, for instance, they want to build stuff. And if they want to develop some sort of electronics or programming, but otherwise the mentor program, how does that really work? And is that the sort of the crucial thing about the whole Hunch program?
It is critical to have good mentors that can kind of help shepherd the projects along. And the mentors don't take over the class. The teacher teaches the class. The teacher leads their team and their students. But when they run into a roadblock or a challenge, the mentors help them. Get past that challenge. So the mentor is there just to advise and kind of keep things moving. So they do an excellent job of that. Our mentors are experts, and most of them have worked in the NASA industry or in the education system.
Yeah, that's interesting. But what kind of background do they have? Are they just teachers, or not just teachers, but teachers, NASA industry? Volunteers? What kind of people do you recruit?
So we have a team that is basically our paid team that most of them have been handpicked from the NASA industry and the NASA community. So many of them have a lot of years of experience working with NASA and at, you know, at the Johnson Space Center and Marshall Space Flight Center and Kennedy Space Flight Center, Langley, Glenn Research Center. So most of the space centers are participating, and that's where a lot of the mentors come from. They have a lot of background with the science and technology and the engineering and the manufacturing. And so those mentors bring that expertise. We also have some educators on the team that have worked with Hunch over the years and sometimes have been teachers with Hunch. And so they've been involved in these projects, and they've been heavily involved with NASA. So they understand the processes and the requirements. So they bring another aspect. They bring the teaching skills and understanding of direct education. And then they have some of the NASA experience. So they can do a very good job of bringing that to the other teachers.
1202.
And before we dive deeper into this, I was... want to rewind a little bit and talk about why you are here in Norway now.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because as we have mentioned several times, and as we also mentioned in the start of this podcast, that Nova Space, our friend Nima, they are now have the European Agency for Hunch, which has already been set in motion. You visited the high school yesterday or the day before. Hadeland
yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They are a part of Hunch Europe, or what do you want to call it? Norway?
Hunch Norway is what they're calling it.
And they have already made a part.
They have.
Correct. They delivered yesterday to us. So.
Can you talk about it?
Absolutely.
Cool. Tell us about it, yeah.
You know, I'm excited to talk about it because that's kind of some of my background is the manufacturing. So these students were given a challenge a little bit late in the school year. Yeah. They are the pilot program, and they were given a challenge and a handful of parts. We gave them some engineering drawings that they could look at and see. They got to pick a part that they wanted to try to manufacture. So they selected a component that is a part of a satellite deployer, which is originally a Nanorax product. And this satellite deployer launches CubeSats out into space from the International Space Station. So this goes up to space loaded and ready with a satellite, and those are launched out of the space station. So they picked a component that is part of that assembly, and they have worked on that for a few months at the school with CNC machining and programming and 3D modeling. They learn quality assurance and dimensional inspection, and they learn how to follow some of the NASA processes. So we bring those NASA processes to them and help them understand those processes, and they incorporate that as they take on this challenge to manufacture these components. So they were successful, a small quantity of parts for the first round, which is very impressive. They meet the requirements. And they have checked all the boxes, and so they handed those parts over to us, delivered directly to us yesterday, and we accepted those parts, and we'll be taking those parts back, hand-carrying those parts back to Houston to the Johnson Space Center for final processing and integration into a flight unit that will fly to the space station.
You know what? I almost get teary-eyed when you talk about this. Because I would imagine being 16 years old, high school, you know, life is challenging on all kind of things. And, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? How will I applicate this education in my life going forward? And you get, like, an opportunity like this, and you can say a few months down the line that, hey, the part that I built at school is now on ISS. And that's just amazing.
Yeah, as you say on your site, it's empowering and inspirational. I mean, and you need that at that age, as you say. That's usually an age where you're sort of looking for what you want to do in life. And it's sometimes difficult to find your right path. And actually, not long ago, I visited the Vitensenteret in Trondheim, which is a science center. And they also run something called the Talent School. And that's... sounds a lot like Hunch, so I'll talk to Nima and make sure that they start talking to each other. Because up in Trondheim, I saw students that are recruited for this and are mainly focused on building stuff. They like building stuff and developing stuff, and they were building a copy of the Mars rovers, and it was so cool. That's sadly they had taken off the wheel, so they couldn't show it to me. But but there's a picture of me looking at this,
drooling.
Right, because, right. And again, it's as you say, it's CNC, it's sort of Raspberry Pi, everything. I mean, it's all available, right?
Absolutely.
Because a lot of this technology these days is not that expensive, right?
Right. That's true. They've got some really low cost 3D printers.
Yeah.
That are very economical. They use these 3D printers to proof out their components before they go to the machine to cut metal. So these students had also produced a lot of 3D printed parts of the part that they're producing. And it's a great part of the engineering process to be able to get that part in your hand, something that resembles it, before you go to the machine to cut metal. And you mentioned the inspiration of the students that these projects give to them. That is so important and is such a big part of this, that there's students that are less engaged than others in many cases. And this gives them an amazing opportunity to become part of something that they can be very proud of. It really raises the self-esteem and gives them something that is so cool to be able to say that they're delivering parts and products to NASA and working with the NASA team.
And also something on their CV in the future. They're going to look for jobs in a few years down the road. And we have, even though it's small, we have an expanding space sector in Norway. And so coming out from a project where we actually, when I was 16, we built something for the space station. So that we've done that. That's a really cool thing to
check
have.
Check that box.
Yeah, check that box.
But I think it's so amazing.
Yeah, I love this stuff.
What we will have to talk about later on is how they implement this in Norwegian schools. I don't expect you to know too much about that.
No.
Because it's a new way of doing things, I think, in Norwegian school system when you would have like this collaboration with outside organizations, which is very different, I believe, for Norwegian school system.
It is. There has been some work done. I actually used to write textbooks back in the day, and project-based work has been used in a Norwegian school system, and also space-related. I have an old a mate of mine from university. He's actually doing a lot of, which sounds a lot of what you're doing, and I'll talk to him as well. I think we just need to connect people up, because it's been done, but very often in Norway, you see, it's sort of disorganized. So it's something happening up in Trondheim, something in Jessheim, and then sooner or later, you have to organize it. And that's what I like about bringing Hunch to Norway, is that we can organize all the people who are already there. I'm also thinking of sort of the maker movement, right? Because we have, all over the world now, there are maker spaces, which do basically a lot of the same things. And in many places in Norway, actually, often in public libraries, they have small makerspaces. So in we have a lot of smaller communities in Norway with just a few thousand people. And they don't have all the resources that you usually find that you talk about, right? Mm-hmm. But they can have them in a nearby city, in a makerspace. So I'm also thinking that this might be a good idea, because it sounds a lot about sounds a lot like the whole maker movement.
Absolutely, and some of our schools, you know, kind of tap into those resources, makerspaces, and a lot of the teachers are involved in those types of places, and so that's a nice resource for students and teachers to be able to proof some of these things out and do some things on the side.
I don't know how you can live a normal life today without a 3D printer in the house. I mean, I use it all the time.
You print everything.
I threw out my 2D printer. It's not, and I went 3D. Yeah.
Yeah. So you now only use Braille when you print documents.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about actual stuff that's been made and is now being used.
Yeah, these different categories. Could you first, because you list up a series of categories of areas of interest, if you want. So, sort of, could we talk a bit about those? You mentioned the culinary.
Yeah, the culinary. We probably should change the name. It's food science, but we call it the culinary challenge. That's unique. What we do is we give a dish or a theme for a dish every year to student teams from around the world. And this year it's going to be pasta. Last year it was like hearty breakfast with a vegetable. So they give them a very broad theme.
Yeah.
But they also have nutritional requirements. You know, what you have to have on orbit, low sodium, things like that. They're different than what you have, you know, here on Earth. we also have to, they also have to consider taste. You know, astronauts, I know you guys know all this, but, you know, they lose their sense of taste to a degree because without gravity, it doesn't, you know, food doesn't flow right over your taste buds. So they like a lot of spice. So we give, and things have to be rehydrated on orbit. So we give them a lot of things like that. What's going to be good when it gets up there to the ISS? And we have competitions throughout the year, regionals. They do more than just make a dish and see how it tastes. They also have to write some, you know, some papers about it. They have to do little short videos about it. The teams really get involved and they really learn a lot about food science. When you get to the final, we invite 10 teams to the finals, which we hold in Houston. We actually have been hosting them at Space Center Houston right next to JSC. The JSC Food Lab is involved heavily. And we do allow international participation in that one. It's the one program that we have previously allowed international participation in by teams. We actually had a team from Slovenia make the top 10 this year and come to Houston to have what is effectively a cook-off.
Oh.
And we get everybody from NASA and chefs and astronauts and everybody come out, and we do a big taste testing, and they all grade it out. And I know George is a taster almost every year. I can't do it because I'm too picky of an eater.
It's a tough job.
So they always put vegetables and everything, and I'm anti-vegetables.
Sounds like a job for us.
Eat your vegetables.
Yeah. Some
welcome.
Of us are not picky. Anyway. So you said
we can have a fårikål in space. It's a very
dehydrated cabbage and mutton. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm out. On the judging.
Yeah, especially the smell. Remember, you can't sort of air out the windows. When you have this cabbage and mutton, a very good tip is to just open the windows of the house and let it out.
The ISS smells so bad anyway. I don't even know if they'd notice. I've never been there. Obviously, our CEO is a former astronaut, Tim Kopra. So we've heard stories from him. But when we get things back at Nanoracks that have been in space, they're always in that that pink poly stuff bagged up.
Yeah.
And a lot of times our guys will go back in the clean room, we open them up, they always want to smell. And I don't understand why they're doing that. It's not good.
Terrible.
It's terrible. Yeah.
I don't want to smell it.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, everything happens in there.
Yeah.
You never
get to open the window.
There's no opening windows.
No, and waste management, so I'll just let that be. Yeah. but also you have sort of like, you said design and prototype. I know that these projects are sort of, you're supposed to deliver a product, and you design and prototype is part of that, but it's sort of also a separate category where you can write software and design stuff without delivering something concrete. Because when you say 3,000 flown items, is that actual physical items, or is this also pieces of software, pieces of design? How does that work? Media?
We're just referring to physical items.
Oh, wow.
Number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. We do have software, and actually we've ramped up software again. It used to be part of the program. It went away for a while just because we didn't have a mentor that could really effectively run it. Mm. But we're back now. We've got a great guy that's ramping up almost too fast for us now. Mm-hmm. But we're actually writing software now for the Gateway program.
Oh.
Just as a task.
It's so going to the moon, in other words.
It is going to the moon,
that's
for
the
sure.
next step. Of course it is. I mean, yeah. Could we just talk a bit about that while we're on the subject? Digressions are us. You mentioned Artemis. You said we could talk about Artemis all day. And that is cool. But Is Hunch also perhaps going to, in the future, be making stuff for, you're talking Gateway, that's already Artemis.
We already are.
Wow.
Absolutely.
This is one of the reasons, Hunch has been a NASA program for two decades, but NASA asked Nanoracks, now Voyager Space, to manage the Hunch program a few years back. And the reason they did that is because, you know, the ISS, which has been funding it, has a shelf life. It's going to go into the ocean at some point. And they wanted to make sure we have a home. You know, everybody at NASA loves Hunch. Everybody in the White House loves Hunch. They've all basically said it's going nowhere, so make sure it's taken care of. So they reached out to us about doing this. We have been working with migrating it over to sort of some of the what we call Moon to Mars or the exploration side of NASA. And it's a slow, we can't manage everything right now. We're still producing the same number of things we are for ISS that we always have been. But we've got to start ramping up some of the production and development and work with the Artemis program as well as we go. That'll probably be the future home of NASA, of Hunch within NASA. We've also started doing some commercial, things. We got permission from NASA to produce parts for commercial organizations as long as they're working with NASA. Think, for example, the CLD programs, the future replacement for the space station, the commercial, LEO development. And we have delivered parts to a number of those companies, including Nanoracks, Starlab, we're building a space station.
Yeah, that's interesting. Just a bit of a side note of that. Nanoracks, Who are you? And you're part of a bigger organization now that is also working on the commercial space station.
Yeah,
NanoRacks originally was...
NanoRacks has been around for about 12 years or so. It's primarily been a space services company. We fly more payloads to the ISS than anybody else. So if you want to go to space, you could call us and we can help. Mm-hmm. We also build a lot of stuff. You know, we actually put the Bishop airlock on ISS, which is the only commercially owned module on the space station. We built it, flew it, and they gave us Node 3, and we're on there now. It's the biggest door on station. We throw trash out with it. So it's kind of fun, right?
It's important.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah, but what with all the smells, I would think so.
You got to take out the trash.
Right. And then Voyager Space has purchased NanoRacks and a number of other companies. Voyager Space has created... NanoRacks won the contract for what is now Starlab, one of the contracts, along with Orbital Reef, which everybody's familiar with, and NG-1 one as well, and Axiom.
Talked a bit about that. But actually, while we're here, we need to get back to you, even if you go home to the U.S., we need to keep in touch because we want to talk about Starlab and the commercial stuff that's happening because that's really interesting. So
we created a joint venture, a spinoff joint venture with Airbus in Germany for Starlab, and that's what it is now. So NG dropped out. They joined our team at Starlab. So now it's just us, Orbital Reef sort of, and Axiom is still involved.
Mm-hmm.
But managing the Hunch program is my favorite part of my job, though, by far.
1202.
So also, there's something called sewn flight articles. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about garments, clothes?
That's sewn products. We call them soft goods.
Yeah.
And those are commercial-type sewing products for space. And so the spacesuit, that's considered soft goods. There's all kinds of thermal covers and ballistic covers, and there's multi-layer insulation. And there's all of the acoustic insulation inside of the space station. There's bags, special bags and containers and safety kits and emergency kits. And there's all types of sewn products that are on the space station and outside of the space station. That is a unique skill. It is not your typical sewing. It does use commercial sewing equipment, but it is a very unique skill. And there's lots of engineering that goes into these products. They're structural, like I said. They're thermal. In many cases, that they really meet a lot of stringent requirements. So this skill is very specialized, and it's actually a really unique career that actually pays very well. So what we do is we get a lot of requests for these products from NASA to support the space station. And so we take these projects to fashion design and family consumer science classes and things like that, where they're already performing sewing. And now they're building items for the space station. So they may not have expected to be doing this type of work, but it in a lot of cases, it opens their eyes to there's all these other types of careers out there.
Yeah, right.
And there's all these other applications for the skills that we're already developing.
From catwalk to spacewalk.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the tagline. That's the tagline.
Exactly. So it's really a unique skill. And like I said, we are looking for soft goods technicians, and it's hard to find.
Soft good technicians. That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
I love the way NASA also always gives this sort of one kind of work and give it a NASA name, and suddenly it sounds like sort of.
in the old days, you were a tailor. Now you are a soft goods engineer.
Exactly. And it is a lot of engineering.
So as you say, it's sort of new skills, also new materials, right?
Absolutely.
And new specifications. Mm-hmm. And it might even have applications down here on Earth if you want to work with new materials and techniques. Exactly. So there are actually sewn items flown from this program.
Absolutely. Oh, We've delivered multiple units, hundreds of items to the space station. Not only what we call build to print, which is build to an existing NASA design and just build it to that design that already exists, but we also develop new designs. So one of those products is the U.S. hygiene kit. So typically the Russians were providing hygiene kits to both of their crew members and the U.S. crew members. And the U.S. crew members said, hey, we need one that kind of fits our application. We need our own hygiene kit. So they came to Hunch and they said, hey, can you guys design us and build us a U.S. hygiene kit, which is kind of like a toiletries kit that they put inside of their crew quarters, which is their personal module, you know, to sleep in. And so we put that out to students. We gave them some requirements. We showed them a Russian kit so that they could kind of see, you know, what was being used. And they took that information. They developed a prototype and they manufactured some units, put that over to the crew to evaluate. The crew took a look at it. They loved it and asked for us to do continuous deliveries of those. So now that's a continuous manufacturing project for the soft goods teams, and we deliver them regularly with every flight crew members go up.
And that's you're touching upon something I would wanting to ask about, is that when you have delivered, when the Hunch program in either department has delivered a product, and as you say, oh, they love it, we need more of these, keep them coming. Who makes them?
Yeah.
Is it the same students that they just kind of like mass produce? Now they have almost like a business.
Well, the initial group of students will build the first round of components, and then the next school year we'll build another set. So it's something that we can continue to manufacture. The teachers get really good at it. They get used to it. They figure out how to merge it with their class. And so every time they do it, they can do it for multiple years with
different
students.
So the program, the product stays with the program.
So new students,
and now it's your turn to make this hygiene kit.
Correct.
And then it's your younger brother or sister goes into doing it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then you improve.
Just continuously improve. Yeah. If they get tired of making that item, they can request, hey, we'd like to make something else, you know, now. And so we'll give them a new project.
You also have these problems on the ISS that you don't think about. I went to the hunchdesign.com, which is going to be redesigned, I guess.
Soon.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you can just head over there and you'll find a list of PDFs which shows the projects as they have been completed. Mm-hmm. And one I really liked was foot pads.
Yeah.
The foot pad thing.
Mm-hmm. The astronauts love that one too. That's a request. We just delivered another batch.
So it's still in production.
Still in production.
Yeah, they said 2017 was the last. Right.
Every crew member wants those. They want multiples. They always want them. Sometimes they want them sort of personalized. Mm-hmm. But effectively what you're referring to are unique problems. You know, astronauts, they're floating around, so they're not standing. They don't get calluses on the bottom of their feet. What they do is they hook their feet under handrails and things all over station to stabilize themselves, so they get calluses on top of their feet. So somewhere along the way, the foot pad was developed. It's very simple, but it basically fits over their feet, and it's got sort of a leathery top section to it with some padding. The astronauts love it.
Yeah.
So we get requests for that all the time. Yeah.
I mean, it's such a brilliant little thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like, is that I think that's sort of important to say here, that, yeah, you can be part of a project that develops a really interesting bolt, which requires CNC, mm-hmm. or a piece of software, but you could also be looking at something as simple as calluses on the top of the foot, and how do you solve that?
Right.
So I love that, because that's how the whole, again, project-based learning works, that you don't always have to shoot for the stars. You could sometimes just do something really basic and it will make life a lot easier.
For sure.
That's where most of our projects come from for design and prototype, is from the crew office. So we are, our hub is at the Johnson Space Center. We are working out of all of the space centers, or most of the space centers, but the astronaut office is there at the Johnson Space Center. And so the astronauts will come over and talk to our team and say, hey, we have this challenge on orbit. You know, we've got this really unique challenge. We're not sure how to address it. Is there something that you know, the Hunch team or the Hunch students can do or develop for us to meet this challenge? And so those become projects for the design and prototype program for the school year. And they go on a pick list. And then the schools that are in design and prototype can pick the projects that they want to work on, and they can have multiple projects and multiple teams at the same school. And then they work on the solution for that project, and they produce a working prototype by the end of the school year. They should have a working prototype, but they follow the engineering process, and there'll be multiple design reviews during that process throughout the school year. And now you get feedback from our experts and from crew members and from the NASA community on what they might do to that design to make it more effective. So throughout the school year, they continue to mature that design. And at the end of the school year, they will have a working prototype that represents their solution to that problem.
And now these students have experience with how product development usually works, right?
Exactly.
Exactly this kind of product review. You go back and you iterate and you make it better. I one thing I saw that was, we could perhaps just mention, when you have a request, it doesn't necessarily go to one school, right? It's sort of, because I saw from when the with the foot pads, there were four different states, mm-hmm. high school and four mm-hmm. different states that had their own suggestions. So I'm right. guessing that many schools can come up with suggestions for a solution?
Absolutely. So each school will come up with their own solution and their own design. In some cases, at the end of the school year or at the end of the program for that year, we will look at all those designs. And sometimes there's really good aspects of each design that we want to capture. And so sometimes we'll merge all the best ideas from all of those prototypes into one that solves almost every challenge, and then it becomes a much better product. So then the input from all these different schools is implemented.
And a lot of the schools will have multiple teams working on even the same project. So depending on how many students they've got participating, we'll get three or four teams from some schools, maybe working on different projects. But it's not just limited to one school for sure.
One thing you mentioned, I jump around, but I was thinking about how this will work in Norway.
Yeah, let's get to that.
You were talking about that you had the culinary part, the food science, which you had opened for international participants. Do you know how how this will be kind of on the broad picture pan out in Norway?
I don't, but I'll say this. Let me back up on Norway. I started about a year plus ago. We got permission from NASA to expand this internationally. It's been something that ESA's reached out about historically, but it never really went anywhere. One of the problems.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah, right.
I have to say they actually have their own program, AstroPy, which is a software program, and it's been big in many other countries than Norway.
Yeah. The issue is usually funding. So NASA is very clear that it's government funding. We can't fund the programs in other countries. We can support them, but we couldn't fund them. So we were looking for a pilot program, and I met some folks at IAC in Paris a couple of years ago from Norway, and we talked, and I ended up coming here in May last year, and I met with Nima and Erik Oldness and Vegard Rekia, and the team was really had a good plan and a good concept, and they were in it for the right reasons, and the educational system here seems like it would fit really well.
Yeah.
So we started talking. It's been about a year from there, and we've sort of developed what we were going to do. We finally are ready to go now. But what I've told them repeatedly is, look, we have a system in the U.S. that works for us, and we've kind of got it down. We want to give you as much support as we can. We want them to be a part of the program, integrated into NASA Hunch in the U.S. I want them to be online in the meetings. We'll try to make the time zones work.
Yeah.
You know, if as much support as they need. But they need to tailor it for Norway.
Yeah.
For sure. And they know the educational system better than I ever will. They also know the industries. Like, for example, you don't have a huge space industry here.
We don't.
Maybe it sort of delves into the fishing industry or oil and gas or something else.
It's very down to earth, very, very oriented towards our needs as a nation. You're right. It's sort of the strategic situation up in the north with Russia, fisheries, oil, monitoring of the Arctic Ocean.
Yeah.
So when we have Norwegian space industry guests, that's usually what we talk about.
Yeah,
but even so, it's growing. And with what's happening up at Andøya, which is going to be a small sat launcher, we now have we are starting to build small sats, which is something I know NanoRacks are. That's part of your business, right?
It is. We've launched a number of CubeSats and small satellites and things like that. It's part of it. Any payload that wants to go to space.
We've even had guests in our studio, students who are building CubeSats.
Yeah.
So we're starting. But what we've lacked is sort of the organization structure. So some way to make sure that everybody who's working, already doing this stuff in Norway or want to do this stuff in Norway, have a place to go and meet up And I, especially, I think I'm thinking about mentorship, because I'm guessing that also for Norwegian hunch, you need to find some Norwegian mentors, right?
Yeah, that would be best, for sure. It would be, so it's workforce development as well, right? So you really need, the mentors will be here. All the employees for Hunch Norway will be here.
Yeah.
We will support, like I said, as much as they like, as much as we can. We're not going anywhere. We're part of the, they're part of our team.
Yeah.
It's just sort of the international arm now. But the all the mentors will be Norwegian, presumably, or at least in Norway, and servicing the schools that way.
But then when the products move from sort of an advanced phase in Norway, they have to go over to you, right? And in order to go to space.
That's true. We'll do assembly, final assembly. We have a facility in Houston where we assemble the products. For example, the deployers that the students made parts for us on. Those are Nanorax deployers, but the reason we're doing those is because historically we fly three or four CubeSat missions a year. And let's say they have these, the single deployers, maybe there's eight of them per mission. They're big and bulky and heavy. We preload the CubeSats in them before we go up. Well, NASA has a real issue with downmass. They just don't have enough space to bring everything down they want. They need to bring recent science, biologicals, things like that down. They take a priority, but they've had to return those deployers to us. So NASA decided, well, what if we just have Hunch build the deployers and then we'll dispose of them on orbit instead of downmassing them. Yeah. So all the deployers now are going to be built by Hunch. They're going to fly up. Those parts that they built will be part of the assembly of the deployers. And this will be going forward. We'll build dozens a year, you know, and those parts will all be shipped to Houston, where our assembly facility and our assembly techs will put them together in the final design. But we, the parts they made this time, actually, I want to mention this, were kind of small. They were simple. We weren't sure what their capabilities were. And we do this with any school, not just a Norwegian school, but we always start them out on, you want to set them up for a chance to succeed, right? We also tell them, look, if you don't deliver, if the part doesn't work out, it's okay. We've got it covered. We're not, we don't want anybody to feel pressure like if they don't deliver, we're not launching CubeSats next year. So, you know, it's okay. We have multiple schools building each part, hopefully. And the idea is to teach them. So if they get something wrong, we can come back and say, this is maybe where you went awry, maybe it's materials, et cetera. And we teach them as we go. But we visited the facilities at Hovland the other day. They can take on much bigger, more complex parts with the facilities they've got. So we're looking forward to seeing what they do and what other schools in Norway do going forward. And it's not just deployers. We make lockers. We make IVA handrails, all those little blue handrails you see in the picture. Those are like 20-something parts to each of those.
Yeah, those
all
are
machine
very
parts.
Intricate, very
and,
intricate.
You know, all kinds of things. So
and they have to be machined to very fine tolerances, right?
Very fine tolerances,
And they can do that in Hovland?
They can do that.
Oh, that's great.
And they've
that's
proven
great.
It. And, and they started with a simple part, but they're already looking at the next step.
So. And it's really cool that the introduction of Hunch Norway has gotten off to a flying start.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just a side note here. When you talk about downmass, I'm guessing that's space speak for burning up in the atmosphere?
No, no. Downmass means bringing things back to,
oh,
to
so,
Earth.
So, but if you don't want downmass, you're going to... So these deployers, are they going to burn up in
the
atmosphere?
They're going to burn up.
Yeah, so, I think that's cool. I'm not against that. I think it's cool. So they're basically also building an artificial meteorite. That's great.
Well, so it's interesting. You're right. We downmass, we've been downmassing the deployers. The only thing that brings things down from the ISS right now is the Dragon capsule. Yeah. And that's not a lot of space for everything we want to bring down. Burning things up, they put them in the Cygnus vehicle currently. So think about the Cygnus vehicle when it resupplies the Northrop Grumman vehicle. It brings all the stuff up they need, food, you know, whatever it is, science. They take it out and they put all the trash in it, and the entire vehicle burns up on reentry. That's how it goes. Now they can only do that about twice a year. So imagine at your house if you had a roll off bin in your driveway twice a year, and that's how you get rid of trash.
All the years, trash.
Which is why it smells so great up there, right? So Nanorax has this trash deployment system, but I'm only telling you this because you mentioned the satellite thing. We basically, it's a bag maybe the size of this table. It's a couple meters across. It's a big bag of trash by Earth standards, but small for the ISS. But we can deploy that with our airlock anytime we want. But when we did it the first time, I love this idea. It basically, when we deploy it, becomes like a really bad satellite. It just kind of like very degrades quickly, and then it burns up on reentry. And I always like the idea that somewhere on Earth, there's people looking up, and they see it. They're making a wish on a shooting star, and it's our trash bag burning up on reentry.
Yeah. Oh, I love you so much, man.
So
this is really interesting, and I find it extremely inspirational just talking about this and seeing how empowering and educational it is, and also to be so hands-on and concrete that these are kids that they actually make a difference.
Yeah. And
while learning.
And speaking as someone who has talked about space for 30 years in Norway, I think the timing's right because it's starting to happen. I mean, it's moving slowly, but we are going to launch satellites from Norway and it will have an impact, even though people are still not talking as much about it as we would like, because it's actually a really big deal. There are not that many launch complexes in the world, and soon the first one from European soil is going to launch rockets, and it will affect the whole of Norway. So the timing is really good because there's going to be a need there. So and again, the inspiration factor, which I think is perhaps the most important, because it's really been sort of uphill. For instance, one of our hobby horses, we always get back to it, is that we still haven't launched a proper Norwegian. There's a Swede who is half Norwegian, but we have Danes and we have Swedes and no Norwegians. And it actually matters. I mean, you know this. I mean, you know how important the astronauts have always been for everything that NASA does. And they're not just popular and national heroes and inspirational. They also bring in money. I mean, that's one of the reasons we pay for space. And we don't have that. So we need all the inspiration we can get. We need all kinds of projects like this. For instance, the Hadeland project. I hope it gets, I'm guessing it got some media coverage. I actually didn't see it in my research, but I am hoping it will. And
it should.
As Hunch moves along, I'm just thinking that we will see more press coverage and that will also sort of starts it on.
They delivered the parts to us ceremonially. Mm-hmm. We went to the school yesterday, but the day before we were at this technical conference technological.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, in Kongsberg. And we did a little event on the stage there, and the students were up there. And we actually had, I think your leader of parliament was there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good.
We met with him in parliament on Monday. We met him in parliament on Monday and met with a couple of other members of parliament. They were very engaged, really seemed to love the idea. Asked a lot of questions, and then he stopped by when he saw the booth for Nova Space and all the students there. He stopped by. We took a great picture with him and met everybody. So there was some, at least.
That's good. That's very good to hear, because this is sort of what we also need, is for Norwegian Hunch to really get a good start off, is also for people to be aware of it. Because sadly, not everybody in Norway listens to this podcast. I wish it were true, but most of the space nerds do.
Yeah.
So spread the words. We could say that. I mean, should we switch to Norwegian now and round? So just thank you very much for coming here today. And we certainly will get back to you, because this is something that's going to happen. Also, we need to talk about Nanoracks and the new space station. So we'll get back to you.
Sounds great.
And we'll also have some Norwegian Hunch people in the studio, Vegard and Nima, perhaps.
Oh, yeah,
both of them, because they need to tell our Norwegian listeners, teachers and potential mentors, how to get in touch.
Og med det så slår vi over og runder av for I dag, folkens. Romkapsel.
Ja, vi kan bare si hunchnasa.no så vidt jeg, det var det som ble nevnt som eller nasahunch.no, nå husker jeg ikke, men det det norske hunch. Det kan du kan bare, hvis du googler hunch på norsk, så vil du se at da dukker Nova Space sin side opp, så den under utbygging, og vi kommer altså tilbake til dette, for dette kjempespennende.
Definitivt. Og da, romkapsel.no, der vi, og på Facebook.
Og det kommer alltid. Lenker
der. Lenker.
Og hvis jeg glemmer det, så får dere bare si, hvor lenken, Eirik?
Ja, det som vi alltid sier, hvor lenken, Eirik? Mm-hmm. Vi høres neste gang, trykk på play. Takk for nå, kjære ørevenn.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.